once more under the breach, dear friends.
Else fill the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and Jake McClure. And I'm supposed to say something right here, but I can't. Oh, yeah, we're back.
Yeah, we're back. We have returned from the peninsula.
We have returned from the dead. No, not the dead. From the dead. The peninsula, the Florida.
Yes, yeah. We were off in the land of Florida.
Yes, a place, Central Florida, which, by the way,
it's very florid.
Just for the record, is infested with rodents.
Yes, there are mice that live in. I mean, they're huge. They are human-sized mice, maybe bigger than humans.
Yeah,
they live in castles.
They live in castles, and you see evidence of them.
I thought you only had to worry about alligators in Florida, but evidently there is actually a huge industry that's grown up around rodents right there in Orlando.
And there seem to be an abundance of bears, too.
Bears as well, yes.
Yes, we saw one particularly large bear wandering around right where we were at one point. Large sort of purple-colored bear.
Yeah.
Yes, and accompanied by a very, very large, I can't remember the name of the animal. Anyway, but there's, the animals in Central Florida obviously have
They've mutated.
Over. Yeah.
They talk at this point. That's
yeah.
Like the secret of NIMH, only it's not NIMH, it's Orlando.
Yes, and so... Children
seem to be okay with these particular yeah. types of rodents. I don't understand
it. It's certainly interesting.
I think that somebody could make a pretty good living in pest control there, though, considering you might have to wear full-plate armor, but...
Yeah, meerkat, very large meerkat,
about
5.5 foot tall meerkat was wandering around with the bear.
Was there a warthog anywhere nearby?
I did see a very large warthog, yes, wandering around, and also a regular-sized one. Also, in the midst of the other pests and unusual things that we saw, it were Ben Bernanke and
Madeline Albright. Leon Panetta.
Yeah. So it really was a fantasy land when Ben Bernanke and Madeline Albright were discussing what goes on in the world.
Right.
And... it was sort of the Magic Kingdom, but it was an interesting visit, and I think we learned something, but I can't remember exactly what it was.
I think we learned something, too,
yeah,
but I'm not
so.
Really sure what. I'm still percolating, trying to figure out, did we learn? I don't know. That's the problem with going somewhere in an airplane to learn things. By the time you get back through the air and land, you go, did I learn anything? I learned about the discomforts of air flight.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing that went on while we were gone...
We have to do a disclosure.
We do?
We didn't disclose that the personal wealth coach is also, besides being a radio tell, is also a investment advisory agency...
Firm. Yeah.
That is registered with the Securities and Exchange
Commission. United States Securities and Exchange
Commission. As opposed to the Namibia.
That could be. I mean, that's Exchange just it. Commission. They're, you know, they're USSEC.
Right.
Which sounds like it could be a song.
You're in a good mood this morning.
See, why? USSEC.
Yeah. See, he's giving more hints as to the rodent problem.
Yes. What's that?
He was singing the appropriate song for rodents.
Actually, I was following along for YMCA, but it doesn't quite work out right because there's too many letters.
Mickey Mouse, I see.
So, if you would like to give us a call and ask about anything that we know which has something to do with finance or the economy or something, we actually know a lot. We just don't know.
How do they know if we know it?
I don't know.
Only ask us questions that we know, but that means that you have to know what we know to ask the question.
Basically, between the two of us, we have about a gazillion years of... That's a bit of an exaggeration.
I don't know. How much is a gazillion?
I don't know how much a gazillion
is. I think more than three.
See, I have been studying this issue for 33 years.
In January, I will be at... 25 years.
25 years and 33 years. So 25 and...
More than three. I said it.
Yeah, there it is. So 58...
That's a gazillion.
58 years.
We now have a technical definition of a gazillion. We have a lot of experience in dealing with financial questions.
Investments and things of that ilk. And it's not so much how much we know to do. Yes. Although we do know, I think, a bit more than the average person. But it's all the mistakes we've made over the collective
quarter
of a century.
Other people make.
Or watch other people make, right. And as a result, being very, very thoroughly experienced in what not to do, after a third of a century at this, I have concluded that all that I really need to do is avoid doing all the things I've seen other people blow up after doing. How do you like that? And the telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County, or
1-866-597-1400. So what happens?
That's all presuming that today is Friday the 13th, falling on a Saturday, and it's in June of 2015.
So Saturday the 13th.
Well, Friday the 13th fell on a Saturday this month.
I think what you just said is not possible. You can't have a Friday fall on a Saturday. Right now we're having Sundays fall on a Saturday, but that has to do with the date line. We're beyond the point where Friday could fall on a Saturday.
Yeah, but it did, so.
It did at one point.
Right. Yes. So anyway, it's Saturday, June 13th, where we are, and if it is where you are, you're welcome to give us a call, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we've got a lot of weirdness here, obviously.
Yes. Markets have been volatile.
Well, actually, it's kind of funny. We left. We came back.
It's exactly where it was when we left.
Pretty much, I don't know, it's down a little bit, but it was up Thursday, 1%,
mm-hmm.
and then went back down, and actually everything closed out just a teeny bit higher than it went down.
For the week.
Yeah, for the week.
Yeah.
And, of course, one of the interesting things is this year, and I'm sure it's frustrating at least to some people, is what the markets have done year to date. Year to date, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up we're almost halfway through the year. 0.43%. I'm getting my tang untangled here. And the Standard & Poor's 500 has actually well over doubled that, almost actually tripled and then some. That return of the this is where statistics come in. This year, the S&P 500 has more than tripled the return of the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
Because it's at, what, 1.71?
Actually, it's more than quadrupled.
Yeah.
So it's more than quadrupled the return of the Dow Jones Industrial Average year to date. And I know that's really exciting. It's actually horrifically boring, but it's just life. And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the First Wealth Coach. Go ahead. Hello.
Hey, yeah. Where did it?
Hello.
Something happened.
Something happened. You're on the air.
We can hear you.
We can hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, good morning, Jeff and Jake.
Good morning.
I hate to interrupt your comedy routine, but I have a question for you.
Oh, well, go for it.
Okay. I just wondered if you happened to see the editorial cartoon in the temple newspaper the other day where they were polling some people about what did they think about the Obama trade agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And the response was, they're all for it. What do you think we can get for him?
Well, we have an opportunity coming up next year.
Yes.
Well, my question is, I don't read too much in-depth information. Sometimes it confuses me, but I wondered if you could briefly explain the pros and cons of this so-called Obama trade agreement.
Okay.
Well, it's really very, very simple. The Democrats hate it. The unions hate it. So what can you say about it from that?
Say what?
The Democrats and the unions hate it.
Yeah, and it must be, they voted it down.
Down?
So the Democrats and the unions got their way.
Right, and hopefully they'll turn it around. The Republicans love the concept, but they're in the position where they hate the guy who's presenting it.
Let me step in here a second. let me explain this. This
okay.
is a big one.
You're out in the desert. You haven't had anything to drink for 3 days. It's 120 degrees. And here's a guy that you thoroughly dislike that comes up with a glass of water.
You got it.
Yeah, you take the water. You take the water. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is what we're talking about here. There are a series of trade agreements that have been moving forward extremely slowly. And by extremely slowly, I mean this agreement was first written in 2005. And it's been 10 years of very slow movement because we've got 11 countries involved. And I'm going to give you the high-threat countries first, the ones that we really should be careful of when we're doing free trade. Australia, Canada, Mexico, New Zealand, Singapore, Japan, the United States. There's more. Do you want me to these are countries, now there are some that some people might actually consider to be a threat. Vietnam is in the list. Peru is in the list, and Malaysia is in the list. Chile is in the list. But basically, this is a group of countries that are already on good terms with each other, that have partnership agreements in defensive trade lanes in the Pacific. But imagine for a second, we already have free trade with a good chunk of these countries.
Yeah, Mexico, for example.
Mexico and Canada, we already have free. NAFTA covers that. This is basically adding NAFTA to a Pacific Rim where we have free trade with Australia and New Zealand and Singapore. Singapore, we already have free trade agreement with. We're already free trade there, no tariffs. So when we have a group of countries that we already have an agreement with added to the list, it makes it more complicated. So let's talk about the ones that we don't have an agreement with. We don't have a free trade agreement with Australia. They've got a pretty good economy.
Well, I don't know. They speak a strange language.
Yeah, they're separated by a common language.
Right,
here. That's,
exactly.
That's two countries separated by a common language. Yeah. We don't have a free trade agreement with Japan. Japan is the third largest economy in the world. And when we trade back and forth with Japan, there are tariffs on the strangest of things. So,
mm-hmm.
And they change every year.
Right.
If we have a free trade agreement with Japan, the amount of mutually beneficial income that arises from that is staggering. We're talking about massive amounts of money going back and forth. We're talking about, you know, this will be the largest as far as economic size free trade pact group anywhere. And what's more, people talk about this as if this is the Obama administration thing. As I said, it was written in 2005. This is. I wish Republican media people would stop labeling State Department concepts as Obama's, because all that's doing is causing people that don't understand the agreement to think, oh, it's from Obama, I'm not going to take that glass of water.
There have been a number of Republicans who oppose it who have stated privately, apparently, but it got into the press, that if it were submitted by a Republican president, they would be wholeheartedly supporting it, but they don't want to support anything that Obama does because it will be crammed down their throats as Obama lovers if they go back, when they go back for their primaries next year.
The people that hate it the most are the unions, the extreme left-wing Democrats,
mm-hmm.
WikiLeaks, and the Tea Party.
Yes. Did you get that?
So this is, I would say it's strange bedfellows, but anytime we have a thing that's pretty well good for the entire country, you get the extreme right and the extreme left against it. Now, sometimes you have good things that the extreme right are behind, and sometimes you have bad things that the extreme right are behind. In cases where they're both against something,
it's
I want to vote
right.
for the thing.
Yeah. The issue here is that the unions and the left wing do not want corporate earnings to go up. They don't want more free trade because they're concerned that jobs will go overseas. Now, that's a really, 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 it's theoretically what they're concerned about. I don't know what they're really concerned about because factually, one of the things that came out this week that's really important is we now have the highest number of job openings per person looking for a job that we've had since we've been measuring that ratio. In other words, across the United States today, we're having jobs go unfilled at a rate higher than we've seen. As a matter of fact, it's beginning to affect various aspects of industry, and they're beginning to adapt to it and spend capital to try to fix the fact that they simply can't find people to do the work.
There's a bunch of armchair economists out there that will read those numbers that we just mentioned and say it's because people have given up on finding jobs. They're right. They've given up on finding jobs because the baby boom generation is beginning to retire. And some people call that lazy. Some people call that giving up on finding a job. Other people find that to be the opposite, that they have earned a period of time where they don't have to work.
Well, one of the issues that's just come up, and it may have something to do with baby boomers, construction is the largest job shortage that's going on in the United States is skilled construction workers, you know, electricians, carpenters, and so on.
Right. Let me hit that demographic point here real quick. This year, 2015, is the first year that millennials are the largest group in the workforce.
That's scary.
35% of the people working in the United States today are millennials, the new millennial generation. Mm-hmm. They're more than the X generation and more than the baby boom generation. Baby boomers are retiring. They've been leaving the workforce, and they've been leaving the workforce as the economy recovers. They, in many cases, have stayed working longer than they expected to, but now they're finally leaving. They're beginning to reap the rewards of all the hard work that they put into it. But if you look at the statistics, it looks like we're still having a really nasty economy because the workforce participation rate is falling and we've got new job openings. Well, those two don't generally go together. If you have new job openings with lots of competition, you get wage growth, we still have people leaving the workforce. That's because if you're a 69-year-old baby boomer who's been putting off retirement for 6 years because of the economy, and you're finally at the place where you want to be, and somebody says, I'll give you a raise if you stay on, they've been saying that for the last 4 years every year, and you finally say, no, I'm going to go work in the garden, or I'm going to go see the North Pole, or I'm going to whatever it is that they have as their dreams that they've been waiting for. There's at some point, there is no incentive that's easily available that will keep the baby boomers in the workforce.
And that is causing some major changes in society. But this is...
robots.
But it goes back to... Well, actually, there's something else coming up, that the construction industry isn't turning to robots. They're turning to a different solution. But
right.
But this is the thing. It, as far as whether or not we should support these free trade, this fast-track free trade agreement...
It's fast track. It was written in 2005. Let's fast track this.
Now, the whole issue is it's the same thing that we have supported in the past. When the first one I remember being passed was under Ronald Reagan. And the issue is that the president and staff and so on can negotiate a trade agreement. That's what the law will allow for any president with any of these countries. And what happens then is the Congress gets to vote up or down, yes or no. But they don't get to add amendments to it.
And what happens? That's the whole idea of free trade, is that if Congress gets to add amendments, that's where tariffs come from.
Well, one of the things that has come up in the past, this is why some Republicans are opposing it, is there's a must-pass, hugely supported bill will come to Congress, and some section, in particularly the Tea Party section of the Congress, will add an amendment to it that has absolutely nothing to do with that bill.
Right.
Like you have to balance the budget and fire the Commerce Department or something like that. And, of course, once they get it hung on the bill, the Senate's going to turn it down, which means that the must-pass legislation turns into a monster, and in one particular case, we get the government shut down. And so the people on the right don't want the inability to add an unrelated amendment to a bill or be able to favor their pet, whoever it is that contributed to their campaign,
and
say
free
trade applies and we'll do lots of imports of everything except shoes that are brown.
Let's add the big piece here.
What's that?
There are 12 countries involved.
Mm-hmm.
If every one of those countries allows their parliament or their legislature or their Congress to make a change to the agreement, none of the
agreements
will look like any of the other agreements. We have to have an agreement that is agreed upon by everyone that can't be tweaked. This is why we have an executive branch. The fact that Congress is getting to vote this is something that's pretty cool, because what it does is it limits the executive power. He can't just say, let's do it. Congress has to agree to it. But if Congress doesn't agree to it, it's like shooting yourself in the foot. It's such a good deal for trade. This group, the Pacific Rim of countries that we're looking at, doesn't include some countries that want to join.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe what we're talking about there.
Yeah.
South Korea wants to join. They're asking to be included. But until we have an agreement going forward, one that's agreed upon by a group of countries, every country feels like they get to tweak it. And that means that the next country that wants to join might want to tweak it. Once we have it agreed upon, once it's there, then any country that wants to join it, they look up and they say, there's already 12 countries that have agreed to this. I can't put anything in, that's petty.
Well, the problem is, of course, the Obama administration wants to do it, which means that the people on the far right are going to oppose it.
I'm actually a little surprised that the Obama administration is behind this.
I'm not at all. If you look at what Bill Clinton did with NAFTA.
NAFTA. Yeah, well, he didn't instigate it. It was,
he didn't instigate it by Obama either. He negotiated it as part of his, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, he didn't instigate it. It was begun under Reagan. And moving forward, it continued under Bush, and then it came to fruition where the agreements, the State Department had been working with all these, the foreign offices and State Departments of these other countries, and they came together with something that everybody could agree upon, and they handed it up to the executive branch, and Bill Clinton said, all right, let's do this, but he didn't start it. And Obama is saying, all right, let's do this, but he didn't start it. This is something that was started in, as I said, 2005.
Well, but President Obama was president in 2005. No, he wasn't. Duh, it was started under the Bush administration.
I'm going to say.
Yeah, okay.
You're right, a really long term.
He was started under the Bush administration. But the point is that he's pushed it through and he's kept it going. And the fine-tuning and the end result of it was his job to push it through Congress, just like it was Bill Clinton's. And what we have is a situation where, in many cases, Republicans start free trade agreements. And because of the way that our political system works, it takes years to get a free trade agreement worked up to the point where the countries generally agree on it. And the guy that has to present it to the Congress and support it is a Democrat. But generally, and this is an interesting point, generally it's a Democrat who doesn't have to worry about getting reelected.
That's true. Yeah. In both cases. Now let me give you a little piece that's going to cause the mainstream Republicans and even the right-wing Republicans to look at this and go, let's do this right now. Free trade agreements allow us to export crude. You know, everybody's talking about,
yeah,
we need to export crude, we need to stop Russia having such a big, heavy-handed grip on the world, we need to be able to bring our oil to markets. If we have a free trade agreement with a country, it takes one signature. Now, it's the president's signature, but it takes one signature to get the crude exported. The way it works now, there are committees after committees in the State Department, followed by the Commerce Department, followed by Congress, to get any crude exported to anyone, and it's only one time on an emergency basis. If we have a free trade agreement, like we do with Mexico, like we do with Canada, we export crude to Mexico and to Canada. We import crude from Mexico into Canada. Free trade means that we can expand our commerce. That's what free trade means. I don't see a negative to this. There's a group that says people will lose their jobs. People lose their jobs, but I don't think it's directly related. So go ahead.
We have another caller on 773-1400. Go ahead.
Well, this is the same guy, the famous Flying Fox.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry that I lost you there, and I had to redial to finish. I just wanted to thank you for your brief explanation of the Obama Free Trade Agreement.
Well,
which turns out to be the Bush Free Trade Agreement.
Right. It's a Trans-Pacific Partnership. And as soon as somebody tacks a name to it of a person, it starts losing popularity.
I've got a comment that I need to add before I drop. I'm going to drop off the line here pretty quick. When they say a free trade agreement, I presume that it's not entirely free. Like, if we have a free trade agreement with a country, that doesn't mean that everything we trade is not free of duty.
Well, it's only duties that we all agree on. And right now, for example...
That's what I'm talking about. If you have a free trade agreement, it's not entirely a free trade, is it?
Well, let me give you a couple of points. If you have a pharmaceutical medication that is being produced in the United States with a patent on it, that patent means that the ownership of the recipe that makes that drug is owned by a company or a group. If someone starts faking it or using the same ingredients but doing it without the patent, we have intellectual property laws that cover that. So this is something in a free trade agreement. You have to agree upon the intellectual property laws. On top of that, most of the stuff that happens there is truly free trade. There's another free trade agreement going on that's been brewing for about the same amount of time. It's called the TTIP. It's the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. And it has to do with Europe, a free trade agreement with the European Union. And that's being held up in the European Parliament, the European Union Parliament, because of genetically modified organisms. They are afraid that the soybeans coming from the United States and the corn coming from the United States is going to be GMO. And they're terrified of it. Even though no study has ever shown that that's dangerous, they're still afraid of GMO. And so it's stopped. And the reason why it stopped is because European laws on agricultural products are different than the United States laws on agricultural products. So there has to be some form of understanding there. If we had a free trade agreement, if it was just passed, then we could bring all of our GMOs into Europe. And they go, whoa, we're not sure about that part. With the Pacific side of things, we don't even have that as a stopping point. Now, if Chinese toys... if China, which does want to be a part of this agreement eventually, if they join up, they have to agree to everything as well. There are safety concerns, like you can't sell toys that have lead in them. Is that free trade to put a limitation on lead in something that a kid can put in their mouth? Well, yes, it's free trade with safety standards. So there are always going to be regulations, but there are regulations that everybody agrees on.
Well, again, I thank you for your brief description, but I've got to hang up and go get a drink of water.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
You can take it from whomever offers.
Thank you and good luck.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye. And we need to break for commercials. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. On the other side, you're certainly welcome to give us a call in here at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
With more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and Jake McClure. And telephone numbers in here are still 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. I have a little piece of toilet humor. I'm going to throw that in there. The Obama trade agreement is actually known as the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I don't like to call it Obama because he really, well, he's the guy that's pushing it now. He's not the one that instigated it and really doesn't have his fingerprints on it at all until now. But there was a survey done on the street in New York, and they were given a choice of you know, the different meanings of TPP, and the vast, vast majority of people believe that it is a type of toilet paper. So Obama's Toilet Paper Act is, I guess, what we're talking about. Ignorance in both the naming aspects here.
One of the things that is important in this is that free trade agreements between countries tend to lead to prolonged periods of economic prosperity and the absence of war. The reverse is also true. The absence of a free trade agreement and some kind of isolationist war of trying to raise tariffs, which will what will come effectively if we don't get this passed, is typically something that leads to reduced economic prosperity and ultimately to war. Now, whether there's a tight cause and effect relationship there or not, I don't know. Basically, we restrict trade with companies that with countries as a prelude to what, if they don't change their behavior, is understood to eventually be war.
Right.
And so, very frankly, the issue of killing a free trade agreement that is already approved around the Pacific Rim, if the United States Congress kills that free trade agreement, it is effectively a signal to those countries that we are hostile to them. And I know that sounds like a backwards way of approaching
it's the way people look at it, though.
It's kind of like if you're promised a raise by your boss,
and it goes to the
Board of Directors, and they come back and say, no, you really feel bad about
that. Right, particularly if the reason why they say no is because of the name of the boss.
Yeah.
Not because of your work.
Well, but whether or not it's the name of the boss, the point is it's seen as an insult to a country that made concessions to the United States. And believe me, the Japanese, for example,
have made massive
trade concessions because
they have tariffs on everything.
Okay. But that leads to something else. The worker shortage that I was talking about is already having an effect. One of the reasons housing starts are not as high as we would like them to be, and the price of houses are going up, which I guess is a good thing in some way, the price of houses going up, is that there's not enough skilled workers in the United States to build houses. Now, there's a couple of reasons for that. One is a lot of the skilled workers were getting older, and they didn't train apprentices during the housing downturn. And the other one is that there's an awful lot of people who used to work in houses who don't work in houses anymore for a whole host of reasons. And then some other people have retired. But the interesting thing is the construction industry is doing something that Americans do really, really well, which is they're figuring a way around it. And the way around it, eventually, Jake pointed out, it was going to be robotics, and I think eventually robots will build houses. But for the moment, what they figured out is if you have, and this one company is cited in a Wall Street Journal article that I thought was pretty good. 2 years ago, they had 3% of their electricians. It's an electrical company. They had 2 to 3% of their electricians actually working in the warehouse, in the factory.
Mm-hmm.
Putting together components that would be installed in houses. And these people work in air-conditioned, relatively comfortable circumstances. They're able to keep them longer, and they do a lot more efficient work.
Right.
Now they're up to 10%, and their goal within 2 years is to get to 25%, because what they're doing is they're looking at housing plans, standardized housing plans, and realizing a lot of that wiring can be put in to the conduit. The conduit's bent, all the things necessary to go in the house. It can be put on a truck.
Yeah.
And simply the pieces put together in the house.
Right.
Now, and there's going to be a lot more of that coming.
That conduit is one of the major time-consuming aspects of an electrician's job on a new work site, whether it's commercial or residential. Pulling wire through conduit makes your hands get all ripped up and your... and then you have to bend the conduit to the right angles and so on. If you're doing it in a warehouse, in a factory, the machine does it. And it's under the supervision of an electrician who isn't getting his hands all bashed up and who is then shipping it as is with kind of a labeled, almost Lego-type set right. of this is how it all fits together. And the lines have already been pulled through the conduit. They just unfold them and attach together, and that's it. It's like kind of your tent poles instead of...
So what they're doing across the construction industry right now is to the greatest degree they can, they're actually pre-assembling pieces of houses, putting them on trucks, and then putting the pieces together when they get on the ground, rather than assembling the whole house
right.
from raw material on the ground. And it's an interesting concept. You'd think it would cut costs. It doesn't. As it turns out, it doesn't cost very much, but it does adapt to a lower quantity of skilled workers. And again, that is, to me, one of the big changes going on in our economy right now. We have, in the past, had the assumption, and by the way, this ties into the student debt issue. We got a lot of people with degrees that are worthless.
I wouldn't go so far. Everybody's worth something to their mother.
Well, right, but the degree itself...
The degree is worthless. Okay.
I was amazed when...
Unless you paid for it.
Right. When I was in Florida and we visited Disney World one day, the Animal Kingdom, which I highly recommend, and I was just asking the various people working in various places there. I was asking people working in drugstores and grocery stores and waiters and waitresses in various places, the majority of the people that I spoke to had college degrees and were working at jobs that could not have been much higher than minimum wage. And I asked them why. You're going to love this. One of them said to me, well, it's really hard to find a degree. I find a job with a degree in art history. And I managed to suppress my overwhelming tendency to go, well, duh.
You can get a job in art history, but there aren't that many of them.
There just aren't that many jobs. And the issue is, and this was surprising to me, and maybe it's because it's Florida, even teachers, people who had teaching degrees, we're having trouble finding jobs because, if you'll think about Florida, the demographic trend in Florida certainly goes in the direction of older people, which means that their school districts are shrinking. And I think we're going to see more of that. I think we're going to see a major issue there. It used to be that if you got a teaching degree, you could always get a job. Maybe it would be low wages, but you could always get a job. And apparently even that is becoming challenging. So one of the things that I would advise listeners and people in general to do is, in many cases, particularly older people who have adequate resources, are supporting their grandchildren in getting college degrees. You probably would do them a great favor if you would ask them exactly what is it you're going to do with this college degree, and then do a little bit of research to find out if what they're spending 4 years of their lives doing and your money and probably borrowing money at the same time.
There's something worse than worthless, which is worth negative.
Right. And actually do a little research to find out if there's any job, what the job prospects. And by the way, you can actually go to the Commerce Department, and they have a whole department within the department that's devoted to occupations in the United States, and in those occupational definitions you can actually go in and see what the job prospects are. They go out and do a survey every year among employers to find out how many people are you planning to hire over next year after that, over the next 5 years, that are in this particular skill set. And you might be really, really surprised. You know, you can always, if nothing else, you can start with the issue of finding the ones where there is the greatest number of openings coming up down the road. Now, there's a real irony there, which I think is fascinating. I have looked at actually this list of where the job openings are and likely to come up down the road. Every one of them are that I could find. Were what we call screwdriver skills. In other words, things like electrical engineer, mathematician. They were all in the technician jobs were opening up like mad. but they all require solid, in-depth knowledge of something physical, that they actually do something. I hate to put it that way. But there's an awful lot of jobs that are that the number of people that are in college right now getting degrees in those areas is significantly greater than the number of job openings that exist or are likely to exist into the future. So that's just one of those things to kick around in your head. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. I'm having trouble imagining the mixed metaphor of kicking things around in your head.
That I do that a lot.
That means that your foot is somewhere where it shouldn't be.
Well, it goes up my mouth and into my brain.
Yeah, foot and mouth syndrome. I see. It's kick this around in your brain while saying things that you shouldn't because your foot's in your mouth.
Another big issue came up this week.
What's that?
In the discussions about Greece, the official discussions.
This is European Union
right.
side discussions.
Well, in the Eurozone. They keep having official discussions,
right.
and they make official reports on the official discussions.
Right.
Nowhere in the official discussions ever has been allowed on the agenda or in the discussion or in the minutes.
Right.
The possibility of a Greek default.
A Grexit.
Until, not a Grexit yet, a default. They're not, and the default, the D word, popped up this week. The creditor nations were having negotiations because the Greeks walked out.
Oh, wow.
And all the Eurozone countries were there. And the International Monetary Fund sits at the table in these conferences. Everybody was there but the Greeks. And for the first time, they addressed the possibility that at the end of this month, the Greeks would default. They basically said there are three ways forward. One, Greece is compliant with what they said and goes on a hyper-austerity.
Right. They have 17 days to become.
By the way, hyper-austerity, them apparently, is, among other things, they've
giving
got
away free computers.
Yeah, stop giving away free computers to everybody below a certain income level. But they either go into the austerity that they're told. Option two, the payments, all the payments that are due are deferred until the end of the year. Now, that doesn't mean that Greece will be any close, because they still will be earning interest. Our number three, Greece defaults. Those were the only when they go back to negotiation with the Greeks next week. By the way, the Greek negotiations have to do something by the end of the month. So we got about 2 weeks left. Because there will be three different payments mandated by treaty, by the Greeks, in the hundreds of billions of dollars total, due at the end of this month. One's due on July 1st, one of them's due on June 30th.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, there's one thing that everybody can agree on at this point. The Greeks simply don't have the money to make the payment. That's A. B, they have said, we not only don't want to get more austere and cut more.
We want to spend more.
We want to relax the restrictions you put on us. And C, the people who are making who would make the emergency loan to them so they could make their interest payments, which is really stupid if you think about it, are not going to make them until the Greeks give in on something.
Well, I have a tongue-in-cheek solution.
Uh-oh.
These are good solutions.
Is that like kicking things around in your head?
Sort of.
Okay.
Yeah. Iceland this week. It sounds like I'm changing the subject.
Iceland is appropriate here.
Iceland, let me give some background. During the financial crunch, the crisis, the panic of 07, 08, the Great Recession, whatever horrifying name you want to label it with, the Iceland economy took it right on the chin. They were leading the world in new banks and financing things everywhere. So a lot of countries had loaned them money. Individuals and countries and country sovereign wealth funds had loaned money to the banks in Iceland, who then loaned them out to all kinds of places, Spain and Portugal and Greece. Well, after the financial collapse, Iceland looked around and said, if we have to pay all of our debts, we're not going to be a country anymore. We're just going to be a hole in the water. So they said, we owe all of our debts. We're not giving up on that. We're paying it back, but it's all being paid back into Icelandic bank accounts. And in order for a foreign entity, a government or a person, to withdraw that money from the Iceland bank, there's a 39% tax on it. They also then went and arrested all of the bank CEOs and put them in prison. Okay.
Which increased their prison population by 50%.
Right. It's not a very large population, but they're all CEOs at this point. Okay. So this week, we're coming forward to now, Iceland, which now's main portion of the economy is fishing. They're looking around and they're saying the economy of the rest of the world seems to be improving. Maybe we can lighten the restrictions on removing money from Iceland. And maybe we can lighten the restrictions on making new loans. And possibly we should get some of those people that are wearing orange jumpsuits back out here so that we can figure out how to do it. So, my thought, tongue-in-cheek, solving the Greek problem is have Iceland get a loan from Greece to pay off the Greek debt with Iceland kroner.
But then put a 39% in.
Exactly, tax. A 39% tax on anyone that wants. So that's not default. The Greeks, when they defaulted, they said, we're going to give you 60 cents on a dollar. Well, the Icelandic people said the same thing, but they didn't default. They just said it's a new tax.
Well, no, they already did the 60 cents on a dollar.
Right, but that was a semi-default. Everybody agreed on it, but it was a semi-default. The original thing said that they would pay, and they didn't. Well, in Iceland, they said, what? We paid it. It's all in the Iceland bank. The only problem is if you withdraw the money, we're going to take a big chunk of it.
And the thing is, if you look at Greece, it's like Illinois.
Exactly. Or New Jersey or Pennsylvania.
We'll come back to that. It's going to be really exciting out there in the next few years, and I still don't know what the heck we're going to do about it.
We have a caller, but we're going to have to wait till next hour to take you. We are out of time here. So if you would like to reach us off the air, we have during the weekend, we have voicemail waiting. Locally at
947-1111.
And if you want to reach that same toll-free, it's 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can read our bios, see our made for radio faces, so on. Read about our philosophy and listen to podcasts of this program.
So until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
News Radio 1400 KTEM. Serving Central Texas, KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.